So anyone that was Mava Sedru, even if you just do the Shnei Mikra part, not the Targum, and you knew what you were reading, which is two major presumptions. So the Psukim make no sense. I'm going to get to Shlomo's question, which you can repeat it soon, but it's mamish my topic for tonight. I guess tonight's topic, I'll let Hanan and Mendy name it, but how to teach emes. And Shlomo's question is a checker to tell a child that Hashem loves you more than anyone. Is a checker. First of all, I don't know, it sounds true. Hashem loves us. So like, what's the... We could talk about that soon, but okay. Okay, so... Here is the Psukim. This is right after Shishi. Right before the Aseres HaDibros. Oh, I'll take one of those. It should be served together with this licorice.
I got it.
Thank you. So the pasuk says, "Vayom Hashem al Moshe, raid ha'ed ba'am. Go warn the people not to touch the mountain." So Moshe tells Hashem, "Of course, I'm not going to touch the mountain. I warned them that already. He told me that already last time. They already know not to touch the mountain. I don't need to go down from the mountain to tell them." So Hashem says, okay, go down the mountain and bring Aaron up. So Moshe went down, and as soon as he went down, the Aseres HaDibros starts. That's when Hashem gave the Aseres, Anochi Hashem Elokecha. So what's so weird? Hashem tells Moshe to go warn the people, and Moshe says, you told me that already, I know that, they know that already. And then Hashem tells Moshe, go tell Aaron to come up, go down and tell Aaron to come up, and he goes down, and then Hashem gives the Aseres HaDibros, and Aaron never goes up. What in the world is going on? So the Midrash explains, it's mamash fascinating. Hold on to your seatbelts, it's mamash so beautiful. What happened was, is that Hashem wanted to give the Aseres HaDibros, he wanted to give the Torah to Klal Yisrael. But he didn't want Moshe up there with him because everyone's going to say that Moshe made it up. Moshe gave the Aseres HaDibros. He wanted Moshe off the mountain so that everyone will know it's Hashem giving the Aseres HaDibros, not Moshe. He needed to get Moshe out of there.
It's a
holiday. So Hashem, the Medrash says, came up with a ruse to tell Moshe, just an excuse to get him off. Now Hashem knew that he told Moshe already. But he figured that Moshe would say, hey, why is Hashem telling me a second time the same thing? I already told the people. And Hashem, Mistama, knew that Moshe already told the people. Yeah. Right? Hashem knows everything. So when Moshe says, well, why is Hashem repeating to me to do the same thing? Oh, it must be he's doing it. He's hinting to me to go off the mountain because he doesn't want me in the mountain because he wants to get the Aseres HaDibros. Moshe was supposed to Klal Yisrael, who was down on the bottom of the mountain. Hashem was on top of the mountain, but he didn't want Moshe on the top of the mountain because it'll give room for the Minim to say that it wasn't given by the Almighty, it was given by Moshe with a bullhorn. So therefore he wanted to get Moshe off the mountain, so he didn't want to say, Moshe, get the heck out of here, you know. He didn't want to tell him to get lost. Because that's not nice. Moshe will feel bad. So he said it to him in a nice way. Go do something which is superfluous, redundant, and repetitious. Which is redundant. So, but Moshe didn't get it. He didn't get it. He said, what do you mean? I told him that already. He was being like, you know, Moshe didn't get it. I don't want to say, it's not prospective to say Dunsey, but he didn't get it. So Hashem said, okay, go get Aaron. Just came up with it, you know, just told him straight up, go get Aaron. And when he went down, he gave the Aseres HaDibros. That was the point.
Wow.
So of course the schmooze over here is, come on, this is from the beginning of the Torah. Bereishis bara Elokim, Bishvil Torah Shenikra Reishis. The whole purpose of creation was only for the Torah. Do you really think that Moshe is going to be insulted that he had to go down? This is for the Torah, for the giving of the Torah. Moshe was leading Klal Yisrael out of the Mitzrayim only to get the Torah. And this is the moment of truth. Hashem would have told Moshe, this is the moment of truth. Okay, go down. I'm ready to give the Torah now. Please go down. Would Moshe felt bad? Moshe, who was the disseminator of Torah, Moshe Kibbutz Torah Misinai, Mitzrayim Yeshua, would he have been insulted? Come on. Ridiculous. But yet we see how careful this was. It's an amazing concept that this is my own. I mean, the shmooze itself, I think, was the Rashiba's shmooze, but I just wanted to just say over one knach. Not even the shmooze. I'm not taking any credit for the shmooze, just one knach. We always say Derech Eretz Kadma LaTorah, but one deher, I don't think the Rashiba said, I don't remember the Rashiba saying, could be he did, is that this whole mess took time, the whole conversation. Like, if the Torah is ready to be given, you shouldn't delay it 1 second. The whole world was created for Torah, so when it's ready to be given, like, what are you messing around over here for? Don't delay it. And you're only delaying it for the Derech Eretz, to teach Derech Eretz. So when we say Derech Eretz Kadma LaTorah, it's not like Derech Eretz should come before Torah. Derech Eretz Kadma LaTorah. Derech Eretz came before the Torah. Means when the Torah was ready to be given, it got pushed off and delayed just for Derech Eretz. That was my Canadian. That was very cute. I saw this over to Rabbi Mendel Friday night. He thought it was like, it's almost as good as the whole shmooze itself. You know, the chap of Derech Eretz Kadma LaTorah. That's my Canadian, I think. If someone took a Chedush Halev, maybe it's there, and maybe I'm just remembering it and thought it was mine. But that was my own Knech. So the point here is that here, you know, there's a Chinuch Vad. So let's spend a moment, a Vad, talking about how do we teach Derech Eretz. So a lot of different things, a lot of components of Derech Eretz, and I guess all Midos Tovos are fit into Derech Eretz, so I wanted to speak. We could branch out to other things, but I just wanted to make one mention of how do you teach the mid of emes? How do you teach a child to be truthful? You know, kids lie through their teeth. You know, everyone knows you can't believe if a 2-year-old says something, a 3-year-old says something. You can't believe them. They have imaginations and. What happens if they're, you know, did you do this? And they say, no, they didn't. And then you find out that they did. No one would think the kid's going to be a thief and a crook. And what do you call it? The kids don't tell the truth. So how do you teach them to tell the truth? How do you teach them to tell the truth? I would think most kids don't tell the truth. Is that everyone here agreeing with me? I would think most kids, right? Little kids. I would think most kids... You know, not that they're liars, but they're not reliable to tell you the truth. So maybe it's imagination. It's not for the purpose of being a chakran, but it's a mitzvah that has to be taught, as I'm trying to say. In other words, what makes a person want to say what really happened and not what they want to say? Maybe they have a story they want to say. It's the story make them, you know, look better or what do you call it? Like, I assume it's... It's natural to want to get out of trouble. It's natural to want to avoid disappointing anyone. So what teaches a child to be that being truthful is more important than saving yourself from punishment? That's a midah. Like, how do you teach that? Like, it's not natural that a child comes into the world and automatically is going to realize you should tell the truth. Why should you tell the truth? When my mother says, who did that, I'll just say, not me. You hear my kasha? How do we teach that?
Aren't morals still like inborn? That people do have a certain inborn understanding of doing the right thing. Now, obviously, children have imagination.
It does say, the only thing I know, you're asking a good question, and I'm not claiming to know all the answers, but the Gemara says in Yevamos that Klal Yisrael are... Rachmanim, Baishanim, and Gomli Chasadim. Rachmanim, compassionate. Vaishanim, modest. And Gomelchazanim, performers of kindness. It doesn't say Bali Emes. It doesn't say, you know, a lot of other things. It doesn't say, by nature, they're... And I heard from the Briska Rav that Bedafka, if you see that someone is a Gomel Chesed, and he's a Baishan, and he's a Anav, Rachmanim, Baishanim, Gomel Chesedim, Rachmanim, Baishanim, Baishan is not Anav. And Gomel Chesedim, if you see someone's like that, it's Vade, they're a Jew. It's pshat that only Yidden have that. If anyone else has that Midah, then they're not, it's Vade that they're Jewish. They cannot be a guy. God does not have those Midas. The Briska Rav said that Kiddush. He said all of them. He says it's Dafka and
I'm saying, like, could
a guy have one of them? Veloacher. So if you see someone, I think I said over this Maisa at a Chinuch Vaz, I don't want to repeat it, but I'll just remind me. I told him that Maisa with my brother with the car. Yeah, at a Vada, I just remember sitting in the seat saying it over. That he thought it was he wouldn't take the money. The Rav, when I went to my, okay, I repeat it for maybe people do and for people listening to this recording for the first time, but it's a beautiful story. When I became a chassan, I davened by my shver shul Friday night. So the Rav was Chassidish Rav, Rabbi Weinfeld, and gave him shalom aleichem. And Mordechai Palmi said, "You related to a Jeff Palgan?" You know, when we were younger, we went by our English names. So I said, yeah, he's my brother. He says, wait here. So everyone finished saying something like him. He says, I'm so happy. Why? So I came out of my car in Borough Park one winter stormy day, and I was snow all over the place, and I see on my windshield, my car smashed, sideswiped, and I see a note on my windshield. I'm sorry I skidded into your car. Please call me so I can pay you for damages with a phone number signed, you know, Jeff Palgan. Now, he used his English name because he didn't think the person's car was necessarily Jewish. So he left a note. He says, I never ever called the number because I wasn't going to give some shagets these chus of being such a balamis because I'm afraid there are yidden who wouldn't do such a thing. And I was always so impressed by the story. Now you're telling me that he was a yid. I'm so happy. I said, okay, yeah, now go collect the money. So I should have told him, had I known this part from the Briska Rav, I would have said, you should have realized that, okay, which one would this be? By Rachmanim, by Shanim, Gomlei Chasadim? I'm not sure.
Gomlei Chasadim, because maybe Meikar didn't.
Okay, all right, maybe. So I was thinking that maybe he should have known it was a yid. That only a yid could do such a thing. You should have known it was a yid. So how do we teach? That's really the question. How do we teach midos? So I heard one good word from the Stipler Rav, and the question came up: how do you teach your child how to daven? And so the Stipler said, if you want to teach your kid to daven, daven. Such a great word. It's pretty obvious, but not so obvious. You want to teach your kid to daven, daven. Don't tell him to go daven, just daven. And maybe on Monday he won't daven, and maybe on Tuesday he won't daven, and maybe next Monday he won't daven. But you're going to teach your child to daven. He's going to learn how to daven because you're going to daven. And that's an amazing yisod. If he sees you do it, he's going to do it. Like being a good role model, and... That's very, very important. You know, of all the Shibalev. So I talk about davening. I just saw this great picture with a motto. It was a picture of Huttner and Rav Moshe. And I believe Rav Huttner was quoted as saying this, is that prayers are not meant for you to get out of trouble. Troubles were made to get you into prayer. That's the word, you know, HaKadosh Baruch Hu mis'av l'tfilos m'shel tzadikim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu craves and desires the tfilos of tzadikim. And not that HaKadosh Baruch Hu needs our tfilos, chas v'shalom. Hashem doesn't need our tfilos. But the tefillah, we get closer to Hashem through the tefillah, and that's the ultimate tainug and the ultimate bracha for us. So tefillah is a very beautiful thing. So when a child sees the relationship through tefillah, I don't think it just means a cursory, superficial. A child sees a pair of daven, so that's it teaches that midah. So if, that's what this diet. This type of meant. I want to discuss the Mid of Emes, which came up, and it could be this was repeated, but not in this context. This I heard from Rabbi Feuerman, Zwart. Shiloh came up at a term of circumvention that the fourth grade Rebbe said that a kid doesn't, I daven with my class every day, and the kid says, he daven, what should I do? So Reb Shmuel said, yep, the kid says he daven, he daven. He says, no, but I know he didn't daven. But no, the kid says he daven, he daven. But the Rebbe foolishly thought Shmuel did not, Kamenetsky did not fully understand. He says, no, I want to make sure the Rosh Yeshiva knows. It's not like I know he didn't daven. I know the family. I speak to the parents. I know for a fact he didn't daven. So then Reb Shmuel said it more stark. He says, if you tell a child he's a shakran, tell a child he's lying, you're teaching him to become a shakran. You tell a child that if you say you daven, you daven, you're teaching him to be a Baal Emes. This is counterintuitive. Very hard to do that. You know the kid lied. So you don't accuse him of telling the truth. I had a maisa. Can I just say about this maisa? Because I just want to give it, the maisas give clarity. So I had this maisa once, as, you know, years ago, and a Beis Medrash guy, you may be upset about this, what this Beis Medrash guy did. I think he did the right thing, but a Beis Medrash guy reported that there was a high school kid who left the yeshiva and he went off campus, and he went somewhere. He wanted to know where he was going, and he left. But if you tell, he'll never talk to me again. I just felt like it's really, you know, he's in danger. He went on his own, he didn't tell anyone, and he's off by his own. He's a 10th grader. And I just think someone should know. I said, okay, I'm very good. I, Baruch Hashem, don't give away my my moles. I keep them really, really, I'm very, very careful with it. I said, okay, no problem. So I started going around to every class. I went to every class. And then when I went to one class, I asked the Rebbe, is everyone here? So he said, yeah. I said, where's so-and-so? He says, oh, I didn't notice he wasn't here. I'm sure he's in the restroom. We'll be right back. I said, okay, good. I left. Came back 15 minutes later. I say, oh, he's not back yet? He says, no, you know, I don't know where he is. That's strange. So then I went and I checked the bathrooms. And, of course, I knew he wasn't there. And it's not there. So
how does Rebbe check bathrooms?
You go and see if there's anyone in the bathroom. Oh. I don't go in the bathroom.
No, maybe if there are closed stalls.
No, they're open stalls. In the middle of class. You know, the only time their stalls are closed is during davening because they have their smartphones. So, but those, you know, back in the day there was no smartphones, so you could still get a stall. So. So no, so he's not around anywhere in the yeshiva. So I called the parent. I said, I'm calling you, I don't mean to alarm you, but your son disappeared. He's not in the yeshiva, he's not in the restrooms. I checked the dorm. the old building. Check the dorm. Not around. It's just nowhere to be found. Says, what? That's ridiculous. I don't believe it. He has a cell phone. I'm going to call him. I said, oh, okay. Let me know. I'm concerned. He goes back. He says he's there. He says, where? He says, I don't know. He says he's there. What do you want? He says, where? He said, I'll call him right back. He says he's right there in the front hallway. I said, okay, hold on. Okay, I'm in the front hallway, not here. And he says he'll be right there. I stand there, and about 3 minutes later, he comes running in from the front of the building. He comes running in. He says, oh, where were you? He says, I was just in the back hallway. The back hallway, I thought I checked the back hallway. As well, when you checked back hallway, it could be I was going the other side of the building. And I was on the other side of the building, was on that side of the building. I said, okay. So I don't want to say for the recording where he was, because it could be, you know, the wrong people listen to this.
Can we pause?
So, yeah, is there a way to pause it? You know, I don't know if I heard the man said that. And I think instinctively, it was before, it was pre-rab before him. And so I just did it instinctively. I did not accuse the kid of lying. Said, okay, I thought I checked there. Okay, if you say you were there, you were there. So I called the parents. Listen, he says he was there. What am I going to do? I'm not going to call him a liar. He says he was there. He was there. But I knew he wasn't there. I knew he was. I think what drove me was I wasn't going to, I didn't do it for the right reason. I did it because I wasn't going to give up my source. I told him I was going to protect his information. So I didn't want to say I knew he wasn't there, because the only way I could know was if someone told me. I wasn't going to say that. So I was ready to even pass on the opportunity. So I let it be. I said, okay, fine. If he says he was there, he's there. But, you know, it just was a little suspicious. I'm sorry I bothered you. Anyway, about 11 o'clock that night, I get a knock on my door. They knock on my door, and they say, Rabbi Palgarn, I came with their son. I have a confession. My son has a confession, and he told me where he was. You see, the midas of the child was, he couldn't live with the lie. He knew he lied, and I accepted it. Okay, you said you were there. It was suspicious, so okay. And he couldn't live with that. And he eventually, you know, just was upset, and he was crying, and he told his mother where he was. And the kachava, you know, came to my house 11:30 at night. He couldn't go to sleep. He just, that's the neshama, you know, couldn't have the sheker. Youngsters are not hardened. And he couldn't live with that lie, because I said I believed him. It was gnawing at him. So that, I think this was my raya that Shmuel is right. You tell someone that if you say it's the truth, it's the, you know, so be it. It's people want to tell the truth, and it's when you challenge them, and you know, then they dig their heels in. Okay, you know, so don't. Kid says something that's not true. You weren't there. Don't tell me that.
What's to stop someone from taking advantage of it?
Well, the neshama, you know, you tell them, if you're saying it, you know, just be careful. You're saying to them that now, I'm going to accept it as the truth. If you're saying it, I'm going to believe it. If we find out, if it's going to find out that you're not telling the truth, then that's not healthy. So get it right the first time and say the truth. Sometimes you mechanech them with that. Teach them what it means to tell the truth. A person feels good. I think there should always be a little bit of, you know, you always want to find the good in what a child does. So we were challenging my foreman, Zichron Levracha, on what if the kid is like jumping up and down in the middle of class, he's trying to teach Gemara, he's banging his a stick against an aluminum bookcase, not letting you learn. What do you tell a kid like that? So you tell a kid that he has a very good beat. You find something good to say about a kid all the time. So there has to be, when a kid tells the truth, you have to go really out of your way to how proud you are that he said the truth.
So what about yeshivas telling untruths, like the example Rebbe gave before with the camera and the modular in the locker room? I mean, I assume the camera was there to keep an eye on the kids, not really for terrorism. So for the yeshiva to say that, oh, it's there for terrorism, what kind of message does that send?
Let me ask you a question. Listen, you know you've been here in the yeshiva too long. When the chinuch, you start hearing the same things over and over again, the chinuch father. Okay? But, so you're walking down the street, and you see on the right side of the street and the left side of the street, two mothers on opposite sides of the street, both with yards in front of the house that are fenced in. One child is by the fence laughing, and one child is by that fence crying. One parent told the child that the gate is locked so that you can't get out and hurt yourself or into the street. And one parent told the child that the gate is locked so nobody can come in and hurt you.
That one's laughing.
Which child is laughing? Which child's crying?
The terrorist one is laughing.
I didn't say anything about terrorists, but
people can't get in and hurt you.
Huh?
The terrorists can't get in and hurt you.
Is the one that's what?
Laughing.
Why?
Maybe said this last time.
Right. Why?
Because the other kid's crying because the kid feels bad that mother doesn't trust her.
Right. So is that a lie? Aren't they both true? They're both true. You just got to find the positive. Tell
that's
the truth.
That's why I call them untruths instead of labeling it lies.
They're not untruths.
It's true, but it's not really it's not the truth. Like, it's true, yeah. But, like, is that the point?
Yeah, that's the point. Yeah, that is the point.
If the mother really made it so the kid can't get out and hurt himself, then the point wouldn't be other people going in. Like, yeah, it could be true, but is that really...
You're saying that both reasons are true. You just said the one that the child could understand. I think both reasons are true, right? You said the one that the child could hear, but both reasons are true.
Well, some are more true, some are more relevant than others, more icker, more...
I mean, you wouldn't say the gate is locked because someone told me they'll give me $1 million if I keep the gate locked for an hour. Right. That would be a lie, yes, that you should do. Now, getting back to Shlomo's question, because you asked that question before, are you allowed to tell a child that Hashem loves you more than anything? That was your question. But before we get exactly the Lashon and be Medayik and what that means, and is it true, and is it whatever, but we don't lie to children. Why should we lie to children? We shouldn't lie to children. No. I mean, you're allowed to lie Mimnei HaSholem, right? There are three times you're allowed to lie. Dachei Sholem, you're allowed to lie, but there are very, very specific types of cases that you're allowed to lie. So what would be a scenario that you should lie to your child that's not Mimnei HaSholem?
Ever. Never. Never lie to a child.
Well, let's talk about it. What would be a scenario that you would suggest to lie to a child? For what scenario?
The case where the mother really made it so the kid wouldn't go out and hurt himself. You don't want the kid crying.
We said both are true,
but
so that's
not possible.
Well, I'd say in this case only one was true.
That's not possible.
And you were inventing cases, so
that's not possible. Though. The mother is scared.
Her?
Maybe somebody will run.
Gonna hate
but
you.
She's something
gonna
will happen.
She's
if the kid will hate you if you tell the truth,
normal.
You mean?
Okay, that's our case.
That's Laman Hashem, maybe.
Not normal people lie.
Right. I said it's not Laman Hashem. Why would you lie?
I don't know. What about if there's nothing nice to say? Right, let's say the kid's smashing the cabinet and instead of saying you have a nice beat, right, what else are you going to say? Because the kid
But that's true.
Let's say the kid has a terrible beat.
Right.
Right.
So it happens.
So you still say you have a nice beat.
It happens to the Rashiva used to. He didn't like giving compliments that weren't true.
He didn't think it was good to do it.
Because he said, wow, he's such a good guy. I remember one of my first years in yeshiva here. So we were learning Eilat Matzias, and it was a 12th grade shiur, and the Rebbe was saying the Gemara. And the Gemara says, Eilat Matzias Shlov, Eilat Matzias Zachas, how the harp is. And it goes to, you know, what's the Argamon show, whatever, so tomorrow, whatever, and it says, Van Puria. Remember that score? Van Puria. So one kid who you could tell was one of the kids who was always fashluffing, always sleeping, he says, what's on Puria? He said, like, in a really duncy way, what's on Puria? And the Rebbe goes, this boy was just mechavin to the Gemara's kasha. My Ampuria. The kasha Gemara asks, what is Ampuria? You know, okay, that was true. He was mechavin to the Gemara's kasha. The Gemara does ask what Ampuria is. So he was just squeezing out of it. But generally speaking, by saying like it's a genius kasha, and if you say, was the Ritva's kasha, it's Tosa's kasha, that's not a compliment, that's just reporting. That probably is good to do, you mechavin to the Marsha's kasha. That's not even a compliment. The kid will feel good, but it's not really a compliment. Just because the kid feels good. But saying that you're so smart, and you're, you know, and exaggeration.
What would be wrong with that?
Because it's you don't know how the child's going to take it. You tell the kid he's asking a brilliant kasha. It's not a brilliant kasha. And he gives a crazy teretz. It's not a crazy teretz. Ooh, that's a really good teretz. And the Rebbe didn't understand what the kid said. Wow, that's a very good teretz. You really thought of that? That's brilliant. And okay, let's go back to that.
So a kid with low self-confidence, what are you supposed to do?
With which scenario? The kid says a teretz that makes no sense?
Yeah.
I would say the truth. I guess the kasha goes there. I don't understand what you're saying. The question is, how could the Gemara say this proof if it doesn't prove what the Gemara was trying to say? And you say some gibberish that the Gemara is not talking about that anyway. Or the Gemara is not giving a proof, or whatever, the thing that's wrong. You say the truth. I don't know if that will answer the question. But I see you're trying, let's find what's real. That's what you should comment on. I like that you're trying to figure out what the answer to this question is. Don't give up. That you could say. Yeah. Rashiva didn't give too many compliments either.
Who?
Zatzal did not give compliments.
Even when it was like where it was like.
He just like if he listened to you, it was considered you were worthy.
Is like, that because he doesn't want to be mean? Like.
No. No. He listened to who he wanted, you know. If he listened to you, it was really worthy. You said something.
Even worthy. If someone did something good and he deserves a compliment, you wouldn't give him.
I'm trying to remember. He once gave me a compliment about someone, but he didn't tell the person.
Why? So the person was it because of guy reasons, or was it just because personality? Or
I think what the Rashiva did to esteem the people was he gave them the relationship. You don't have to give so many compliments if you have the relationship with the person. So the fact that he spoke to you and said hello to you and how are you doing and
what's doing. Yeah, but if you give compliments, it helps more.
Yeah, I don't know. It doesn't, because the person doesn't really believe it. Doesn't believe the compliments, so it's It's shallow.
Person never just.
It's shallow. It's shallow. It's not real. He knows it's not real. So I think that's why he desisted from it. He gives you his time and his quality time and his interest in you, that was more esteeming.
There was a lot of the kid like singing off key or kid sits down on the piano and bangs it out and it sounds terrible.
It's very
interesting. You're playing so beautifully.
You do. The Gemara does say that you say Kalanov Chasuda, even if it's.
That's for the chasam.
Huh? Well, that's the chasam. It's Marbe Shalom.
But there's a pshat.
Right? Is that the pshat?
Yeah,
there's
another the kid's banging on the piano. It's terrible.
That the happiness makes it kalav now the chasuda.
It's also minei shalom. It's also marbe shalom. So it's also shalom. But let's discuss this. The kid is singing. You say, "Why you sing so nicely?" But that might be true because of mother or grandmother. Thinks the child's so speaking so nicely, but what about saying it truthfully? What you sing with such gusto, you sing with such pizzazz, you're so dramatic when you sing. I love to hear you sing. That's all right, because you could be truthful, and it's probably good to say things that are truthful. Then it will be meaningful to them when you say it. Has more meaning. Otherwise, they're just like empty platitudes. I think that's the expression. Empty platitudes are considered like patronizing and of little value to the recipient. It's not real. Like, because Rabbi Luban doesn't give compliments, if he'd walk by you in the Beis Medrash, Matan, and would say, Matan, I want to tell you something. I saw you learning something and say saying something over, and I happened to overhear and you said it over totally accurately. I was really impressed. Fall off your chair. You're like, if he gave you a comment, it would have more meaning. Why? Because he doesn't give so many compliments. So the mail of the compliments that we give may aim that the ones we give should be accurate and then it's much more meaningful.
So you're saying give accurate or give
accurate.
Less.
Yeah, accurate. It should be accurate. I think the conventional wisdom among educators is that we give accurate and specific praise. Because if a kid asks a question in cheer class and you say, very good, what's the answer? Very good. That's like big X on that teacher. Very good. Excellent. Wonderful. That's all meaningless. Excellent what? Wonderful what? Very good what? Pointless. X. You write up that teacher, that Rebbe, and
excellent trying.
Try accounting. But with just, no, I'm just kidding. But you know, things to look. One of the things that you learn when you're, you know, observing another teacher, maybe you try and train them to give specific praise. Wonderful. That was a wonderful question. That was a very insightful question. A very good question. Okay, very good question. It's, you know, it would rate. It was the lowest level, but it rates. At least you're being specific.
You have to have the vocabulary.
Huh? You know, it's good to have a vast vocabulary because then you sound like a simpleton. You know, when you talk to a four-year-old, you have to say complex things but using very simple words. And very simple words, there aren't that many of them. So someone who's a little bit more sophisticated wants to use, you know, words. Like their vocabulary is more sophisticated. So yeah, it's not different ways of saying different things. So it's, it sounds more real.
Well, what if you say something that sounds like a compliment and it makes the guy feel good, but you really mean it in just like a vague kind of way? And for
like,
you,
like excellent,
it's something bad. But for him, it's something good. Like you say, I really like it when you sing. For example, you like it when he sings because it really makes you laugh when he sings. It's hilarious. How bad. Whatever. Or somebody was giving an example early in the year. How do you compliment something when it's hard to find something to compliment? Somebody was giving an example. He said, so you see someone has the weirdest shoes you've ever seen. So you say, Wow, those are really extraordinary shoes. I've never seen anything like those. It's so unique. And the person's going to feel really good, but you don't really mean it like that.
Rabbi Kaufman in Dallas has a good word. He says it's not his own word. He heard from a relative. I'm just saying it over in Bishmo to bring the geula.
His unique shoes.
He says that sincerity is the most important thing. And if you can fake that, you've got it made.
I think I've heard really bring that from Dale Carnegie.
I would be very hesitant, very reticent. Hesitant is like I'm hesitant to polish my shoes because maybe I'll get my hands dirty. That's hesitant. I'm hesitant. Reticent is a higher level of hesitance. That's why it's good to have vocabulary. I'd be reticent to tell somebody to do that. It's okay to do that because I the truth always comes out. You know, I once said at a graduation comment. You know, I speak about the boys at graduation.
I remember that.
And in my youth and inexperience, I think I once said to someone, this is someone who could, I wasn't careful with my wording. And the reason why I became good at certain things is because I took criticism and I corrected it. You know, so one of the things I got a criticism on, you always get criticism and you don't always correct it. I got criticism. Criticism was that I was writing great comments, but they didn't necessarily fit the person. So, like I once heard from someone that very often people take a person's chesaron, like by a shever brachos, and they'll speak about the chesaron in a positive way, but really the person was really dissing, didn't mean to diss them, but they weren't speaking about the ma'al, they're speaking about the chesaron. You know, you have to work hard to come up with what you want to speak about, but so on. So I said something which could have been taken two ways, and it was, you know, it was the recipient took it the wrong way. So I think that if a person did that, Moshe, it's going to come out that he meant it the wrong way. If not right away, eventually, his body language is really. You know, you can read into it. I've been involved with so many machlokasim through the yeshiva Baruch Hashem. You stay in yeshiva, you see everything. There have been a lot of machlokas, nothing serious, but not avoidable. Sometimes we deal with a lot of people who are hurt, and they always know everything that we were thinking and why we were thinking it, and how do they know so much? Because if you analyze it and you really put it under the microscope, you could figure out, come on, when I from other things that you said, you're not the type, you never liked any strange boots, and you said, well, those, and you said, he told me that he thinks he's the most unique, and probably what he really meant was that they're, you know, spazzy boots, and like, he was laughing at me, and he thinks I didn't know, but I did know. And I wouldn't be hesitant to, you know, mean something sincerely, despite what Rabbi Kaufman said. Joke, if you could fake that, you got it made. You really can't fake that. You're not going to say a compliment sincerely. They're just, you should err on the side of caution. When in doubt, you know this one? Leave it out. When in doubt, leave it out. If you're not sure you should say it, you usually shouldn't. If you're not sure you should send it, you usually shouldn't. Every time I'm angry and I want to like send out an email, and I say, okay, this time I think I'll make an exception and send it because they really need to hear this. And I never really, I don't. I always regret it. I always say, okay, good thing I didn't send it. Because when you're upset, you're thinking, I wouldn't say it. What do you say? I think that's the thing that's right. Any right answer?
I mean, that's right, yeah, but. I had a question, I forgot about it.
So the basic word in terms of teaching midos is really, if you want to teach midos, you have to be a ba midos. So it's amazing what people learn just from how we act. So you want to teach your kid to be a ba chesed, you have to do chesed. You want to teach your kid to be truthful, you have to be truthful. And you have to, and the worst thing is you tell your kid to say, okay, tell them I'm not home on the phone, or you could say they're not available. You know, someone comes to the door, you say that my father's not available now, just tell him I'm just not available now. What does available mean? It means he's just not available to talk to them. What are you supposed to do? Once a kid sees Shaila, once you see a kid sees the wrong thing, it's very hard to undo it.
So even one time?
Doesn't mean with tzaddikim, but yay, one time.
Seeing him do the right thing once equal out or break, or one time he's...
I mean, yeah, you know. One time is one time. It's one more than zero times. So it means that it could be once in a while you could do it, you know. Listen, we like to be perfect, shoot for perfection. It doesn't mean you do it once, you do it all the time, okay? We should try and do the right thing all the time. I know that the things, you know, the things I learned, you know, I learned from my parents, my grandparents. You learn certain things, so you see them. So, you know, how you give tzedakah, my father had to teach me how to give tzedakah. How many times did I think I saw him give tzedakah? When does a kid see his parent give tzedakah? And Shuli gives him a quarter in the pushka? But you see a certain type, you see a certain way, you see a certain generosity, you see a certain pattern. You see certain things, that's how you learn. So that's what you think back to, the way you learn certain things, that's probably the way your kids are going to be able to learn those things. So which things you want to be mapping on, probably your kids will be the beneficiaries of it, the same way you were beneficiaries of it. We all learn different things, that's how it goes. Okay, so what do they think they're going to name tonight's bod? Don't give. Maybe it should be titled "Empty Platitudes." Okay, fine.
How to teach your parents?
How to teach your parents is a good one.
Someone told me he's a good singer.
Who?
Someone just in the high school was like, I'm a really good singer, actually. I think I'm really good. And he's like really, really bad. Just like, not just regular bad, he's like awful.
You know what I noticed?
He is a singer, but
what I noticed is from this for many years, I was involved with the high school for many, many years. Many kids in the high school who their voice goes off, you could learn how to have your voice not go off key. You're a strictly singer, so maybe you could relate to this. I've seen this many, many, many times. Kids in the high school have good voices, but they go off. Mm-hmm. And I've noticed that some of them make the best. They learn how to sing on key. Evidently, you could learn how to sing on key.
I did that.
Huh?
I
if you speak to me in private, I will tell you which people, you know them. And they're known in the system to be unbelievable singers and Bali Tfila. And
do they go off key?
I'm not a great singer. Okay, this I can only do to a singer, because you're a singer. I'll speak to you in private, and I will tell you the name. I'm sure you know who it is. And you're going to say, what? He was never off key. I'm telling you, they were.
I never had a good
most
voice.
People
I used to sing off key.
Huh?
Most people call off key.
I do not have a great voice, but I do not go off key. I don't have a good voice. I don't have such a beautiful voice. But
doesn't have to do it, right?
But
it's
on key. But there are people who have can go off key. It's a like a little kid, a 4-year-old, 5-year-old. He could be off key. It doesn't mean he's going to be all going off key. You're giving up too soon on the kid. You think when you were 4 or 5 years old, you went off key? Why? I don't have
whacked up for it.
Don't you have an ear for music? Yeah, an ear for music, but.
So what am I supposed to tell him? Let's say he would sing to me. Like, what do you think? I can't tell him. If I tell him, wow, you really passionate when you sing, he's like, yeah, you're avoiding the question. Am I a good singer?
He asked you if you
would sing. I know it's late, but now it's an example. Am I supposed to tell him, yeah, you're a good singer, and then...
Tell me the case. A kid singing in your room.
Right.
Singing in your room, and he says to you, am I a good singer?
He says, I think I'm a really good singer. What do you think? And he sings to me. And I think it's awful.
And you don't know how to sidestep such a thing?
No, if I tell him, you sing really passionately, he's going to be like, you're avoiding the question.
What?
It's
you,
like,
you sidestep this. You're asking me? I can't tell a singer from a... You know, a bat.
It's not that hard. If I have a I assume kids could be stubborn.
So that's where you sidestep. You don't answer the question. I don't know. You walk away. I don't know. I have no idea. Why are you asking me crazy questions?
The kid won't feel hurt. Like, can't just say yes and then end it. Like, if you
I'm
put
not,
down.
I'm not a judge of singers. I have no idea. I'm not into that. Why don't you go ask Chait?